We've all had some close calls in life. Maybe you turned in an assignment at 11:59 p.m. Maybe your car was attacked by a raccoon and you escaped without a ton of damage to your passenger door. Maybe the cookie didn't quite crumble in your favor because you're a Division I athletic director whose basketball team has lost their last four games by 6 points or less and whose baseball team blew 2 8th-inning leads in their opening weekend in Puerto Rico. Let's talk about how insane that would be and so unlikely and unlucky that that would never, ever happen to anyone. Let's roll the music and talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktru.sports on Instagram and at ktrusports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for the staff, please feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktrusports@gmail.com, ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Let's get into it. Throughout the next hour, you will be hearing from a whole team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, it is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. As usual for this winter season, we're going to start it off on the hardwood with our Rice men's and women's basketball teams. The Rice men had snapped a losing streak when we last talked to you, but that is their only win in their last 12 games. They are 1-11 in their last 12. They have had a whole series of close losses. Their last four have all been lost by 6 points or less. They lost to Charlotte by 3, North Texas by 6, Tulane by 3, and then UAB by 1 in a heartbreaker at home on Wednesday the 19th. Couple bright spots, though. We've talked about the need for the Owls to develop a leading scorer, a bucket getter. Jacob Dar has dropped 16, 21, and 24 in their last three games, respectively, against the Mean Green, the Green Wave, and the Blazers. He is actually a Nebraska native, shout out, and transferred from Division II Emory and Henry College. Go Wasps. So there's a little info for you on the Owls' latest standout sharpshooter. They have improved to 12 and 15 on the season. They are 3-11 on the year, which puts them towards the bottom of the American Athletic Conference standings. The women have a little bit more uplifting outlook. They have snapped a four-game skid after losing in triple overtime to the South Florida Bulls, a game in which Anaya Alexis had 20 points. Dominique Ennis followed that up with back-to-back double-doubles to help them play Wichita State close on the road and then get a huge win, 72-39, home against their Owl counterparts from Florida Atlantic. The Owl women have improved to 13-13. They are 6-8, which is good for ninth in the conference. I don't think it's too early to, like, I've said that wrong. No one should lose hope about the Owl women yet because they are ninth in the conference, but their games moving forward are against UTSA, UAB, Temple, and North Texas. So they've got 3-4 at home to close out the season. If they get into a 6 or 7 seed, that'd be about where they were last year when they went on that run and ended up making the NCAA tournament. So if you need a Rice basketball team to hold out hope for, I would put my chips in the women's basket rather than the men, as they have lost 11 in their last 12. Rice men's tennis is on a 4-game winning streak. They have beat LSU 4-3, Lamar 6-1, Texas Tech 4-2, and FAU 4-0 since we last talked to you. They also had a match scheduled against A&M Corpus Christi. That game was canceled due to weather. The Jewish Community Center must not have been available. If you know, you know. Their next match is on February 27th against the number 21 nationally ranked Pepperdine Waves in Malibu, California. The following weekend, they will be in La Jolla, California at the ITA Pacific Coast Doubles Championship. So big stuff on the Golden Coast for the Owl tennis team coming up. Rice Baseball opened their season this past weekend. They were in Puerto Rico, as we previously mentioned. Their first game was against the Villanova Wildcats of the Big East. They dropped that one 6-10, and then also lost the following day to the Michigan Wolverines by a score of 5-2. They then played, wrapped out the season against number two ranked nationally, the Virginia Cavaliers. They lost that game 6-0. Yeah, so great start for them. But they came back well against Sam Houston in another rather rescheduled game, which was in the middle of the afternoon on Wednesday. They won 6-1 against the Bearcats. Whole roller coaster of events and emotions over the weekend for Owl Baseball. Chaotic, if still disappointing. I am joined by Jacob Bolanos and Max Baserto, and we are going to kick off the show by going a little bit more in-depth into Owl Baseball and give you kind of an outlook for the next few weeks, the roster, and the season as a whole. So, Jacob, why don't you start us off with a few of your thoughts about opening weekend?
Definitely. I'd say when I went to the freezing weather game over there on Wednesday against Sam Houston, it was definitely a great rebound from the 0-3 start, and it was a great outing by Tucker Alkheim. He had 4 1-2-3 innings, 3 hits across the 7 innings, no earned runs, 0 walks, and it overall, very efficient pitching as he only threw 64 pitches across those 7 innings. And he also, obviously, Blaine Brown started the game due to the DH rule. And somehow he had 4 strikeouts in 1 inning, which is not something you get quite often. But I think that this win will obviously help with the pitching staff. But in what sort of way do you guys see them coming back from this win?
I think the, like, going into the Puerto Rico series, it was a little bit, like, they were kind of obviously outmatched in a way. Like, just in terms of, like, on paper rosters, like, the only one of those teams they really had a chance of matching up with was Villanova. And so I think playing them, and I think having to travel that far and then play in a stadium that was, like, pretty empty and just lose heartbreaker after heartbreaker after heartbreaker to start off the season is just, like, way more detrimental for morale than it is the actual outlook of your season. Like, obviously, like, they could still round back and have a decent season in conference play theoretically, but that's just, like, not at all the way that you want to start. And I was actually thinking about this when I was watching. I was like, man, that flight back, that's a long flight, and there are 2-hour time zone change. Like, that's just brutal to, like, just go through as a team. So I think to come back and have solid outings from, you know, Ulch is a guy who wasn't throwing a ton of innings last year, so for him to come out and have 4 solid innings, to have a new pitcher with a really solid start, like, that's those are two things. Having good starting pitchers was one of the few things I feel like carried the Owls to the success, the little bit of success they had last year. And I also think that just, like, showed, like, obviously a lot of the issue they had over the weekend was bullpen depth. So having a reliever come out and get a really good outing, I think, is just really, really, really good.
I mean, commenting on that reliever issue, it's sort of, it was going 6-0 at till the end of the game, and then you put in your reliever, and then he gives up, I believe, 3 hits and gives them a run. So obviously, I mean, it didn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but obviously that's something you also got to be aware of and adding to the issue of relievers.
Well, I think if we're going to talk about last year, you're going to see, right, like, Parker Smith, who now plays affiliated ball, and then JD McCracken as your, like, Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, Sunday combo, however they stack it up. Those are two, like, very, like, I would say definitely above average starting pitchers in the American. So to, like, have that as, like, your Friday, Saturday punch, or, like, 2 of your 3 games every weekend, and then still go on to lose as much as we did, I feel like says a lot about the rest of the aspects, kind of, as the team, especially. I mean, scoring was obviously an issue, right, because you have good starting pitcher, subpar batting order. Now you're in a tight, low scoring game headed into, like, 5th, 6th, 7th inning, comes down bullpen to bullpen, mano a mano, and we just never quite stacked up in that way with our reliever depth. What were you gonna say, Max?
Yeah, I just hope some of those relievers got to enjoy the nice weather in Puerto Rico, because their performance was lackluster, to say the least. And I think some of the performance does give me some hope for the rest of the season, considering we were up 6-5 and 2-0 on 2 solid teams. But how are we going to win games with no bullpen? How much pressure are we going to be putting on some of these good starting pitchers and some of our late game batting to, like, have to score 3 runs in the 8th, 9th inning just to win a game when we were up earlier and the pitchers were pitching extremely well, as Jacob pointed out? Like, I just feel like there's a lot of pressure on those starting pitchers and then some of that clutch batting as well. And I feel like that's a lot to deal with over a very long baseball season.
I would definitely agree that it puts a lot of pressure on the starting pitchers. I think, like, I don't have any numbers to back this up, but watching games last season and this weekend, it felt like it was like, oh, it's the 4th, it's the 5th, it's the maybe even the 6th inning. Our starters getting into trouble. They've only allowed, like, 1, 2, 3 runs. It's like, that's a start, especially in, like, a college run scoring environment, that, like, you need to be able to, like, bounce back and win those games more often than not. And it felt like there was a lot of pressure, like, oh, you got to stick it out. Oh, we need more innings from our starting guy. Like, if we really want a chance at winning, we need, you know, Parker Smith or whoever to go, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 innings with, like, one earned. And it was like, that's just, like, way too much to ask, I feel like, of some of those guys.
And especially over such a long season where you play so many games.
Oh, yeah.
It's such, like, a, like, you have to be consistent throughout the year, and putting that much pressure on starting pitchers is not going to help that consistency at all.
I feel like another thing, people, I know a lot of people who probably listen to our show aren't religious followers of college baseball. They play like 50 to 60 plus games in just a regular season over the course of like 3 months. So of course, like, you know, people know that, you know, MLB season has 162, basically a game every day. College is less than that, like in terms of like a regularity standpoint, but it's still like a very, very, like compared to other college sports, like you're playing way more games and honestly, I think way more travel, I feel like, than basically any other sport, because you're going every weekend. You've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you've got at least one, if not two or like three midweeks, depending on, you know, where you're having to go to, who you're playing, where you are in conference play, all that stuff. And then afterwards, you could have conference tournaments, like a whole week of like 4 or 5 games. Then if you make a postseason, right now, that's like, that can drag out for like a month. So like, there are guys who are like playing like before the season's over, they've played like 70 games. So I think that's another thing that Max makes a really good point. Just getting through like a long season, it was like, you need to have, like, you have a really cohesive team, and that's something that we see of teams that make runs, just, like, generally speaking. I think the Omaha and the CWS teams that do well in even Rice's conference, it's like, oh, they've got people who can hit the ball well, they've got good starters, they've got bullpen. Like, you've got to be well-rounded. It's really hard to be carried by a small group of stars in college baseball specifically.
I think definitely. I think switching now to the side of the offense and what I saw on Wednesday night or afternoon, I saw definitely a much better rebound for the offense. I think they started off really strong. They got on the pitcher. They totally tore him to pieces. They got 5 hits in the first 3 innings. And they had a really good first inning. They got 3 runs, and it's a very hot start. And unfortunately, a miscalculation by the third base coach kind of got the runner out at home. But besides that, it was very well. Catcher Landon West stepped up to the plate, going 3-for-4 with 2 RBIs. Duffield continued his great year. And it went 2-for-4. And I think it was mostly the latter half or the later half of the order that stepped up, especially to provide some clutch hitting. But there still are obviously areas of concern, especially with how many strikeouts there were at very crucial moments of the game. And I'm not sure if you guys have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I actually like look at the Puerto Rico series, and I don't think it's like a terrible result in terms of offense. Like, obviously, we get shut out in the last one.
Right.
But we still, heading into the eighth against Michigan, we're up 2-0. That's a winnable game. We would take that in a big matchup in something like a conference tournament or in a big conference game. I feel like you would take that offensively. And then again, to score 6 runs against Villanova, you would also take that. So I don't really see like extreme concern offensively in the long run as much as I am more concerned about pitching.
I would agree that I'm definitely more concerned about like pitching depth and the bullpen, I think, really specifically. And also, like, do we have people who can start like a weekday game out on a Monday, Tuesday after a series, or like a Sunday game? But I think that there's also a point where, like, if we score 2 runs like in a game, we can't like reasonably expect to win that more often than not. Like, I don't think you can look at your pitching staff with a straight face and be like, guys, we scored 2 runs. How did you blow that? Like,
yeah, for sure. But I do see, like, I don't expect us to like consistently put up 5, 6, 7 runs in a game. So having the offense be able to develop leads in games where they're low scoring or high scoring is something that we've shown already this year. So that's where my kind of like, I'm like, okay, the offense can suffice at times. And I'm just more concerned about that pitching depth.
I think that's fair. I think that's a good way to put it. I think I would also say that when you get into, like, you know, if you get into a pitcher's duel and you have the edge, or you get into a shootout and you have the edge, it was like, the thing is, like, when you don't have a bullpen that you can trust, having an edge just doesn't do you that good very often. So I think that's definitely what you're getting at. And I think the way I was thinking about it a little bit was that, like, maybe if, like, we had, you know, a really good offense instead of, like, an okay offense, then, like, we would just take some pressure. We could kind of make up for the fact that our bullpen is going to come in and give up a couple runs at the end of every game. But it was like, we could reliably have, like, it was like, maybe if we just had, like, you know, 6 guys who just rake, and we could have, like, a 4, 5, 6 run lead every time we had to, like, for get sure. a starter out of there. It's like, that would be one approach, but, like, that's, I think you're right, that's not, like, the realistic way yeah. that this is going to have to go. Okay, let's transition a little bit, because now that the Owls are back in town, they are taking on the Trojans of USC, one of the most historic programs. They have the most College World Series national titles of any school. This kind of continues a pattern of the Owls inviting major Power 5 conferences to play them on opening weekend. They've done Stanford, they've done Notre Dame, they did LSU last week, and now we've got USC coming in. They are ranked 6th in the Big Ten preseason polls. They haven't been up to their historical excellence kind of as of late. I don't know if we have any thoughts on USC or how this series is going to look.
I mean, USC started off the season strong. I know they're ranked 6th, but obviously it's in a Big Ten a Big 12 conference that has, 18 teams. So they're still good. They're 5-0. I think they're playing, tonight's matchup is going to be against Caden Hunter, a left-handed pitcher, and I expect to see catcher Landon West and Duffield to have another good day as their righties against the lefty. So I think it's
good
gonna
shout
be
there. I agree with that.
I think they're gonna have another good day. Maybe Blaine Brown might struggle a little bit because he's a lefty, so that lefty lefty matchup might be a little bit harder for him. But besides that, I expect the offense to go out there, have a good day, and I don't think it's gonna I think we're definitely gonna take at least one of the three against USC. And I think that getting any sort of momentum from this series will help us in the long term a substantial amount.
Okay, a couple things I just want to add in. One, for the viewers at home, we record these on Friday, so that matchup that Jacob is talking about will have concluded by the time you listen to this on Saturday, so you can go ahead, get on the internet, do a little Google, and figure out what happened, how that went down, and then follow up on Saturday and Sunday. Do we think, final question for the table, that if the Owls take one win this weekend, that we can call that a success, or do they need to win the series? Are we content with them going 1-2?
I mean, when you're going against such a tough team, I don't think that it's going to be obviously you cannot get swept. Swept is going to just completely ruin the mood of the season. Starting the season 1-6 is going to be absolutely
we can't do that.
Brutal. But if you take two, definitely a much better outlook on the season. One is going to be depends how big the losses were the other two games, obviously.
Right.
If you're going to lose a heartbreaker and then you win one and then you lose a devastating amount, then that's probably not optimal. But I mean, if you can stay in those games close, the bullpen showing some signs of promise, as long as they don't completely blow those two games, then I think losing two might be okay.
I will bet that the Owls lose at least one heartbreaker. I just kind of have a feeling that pattern might continue a little bit. I think that if they only go 1-2, the question is USC a good enough team, and are the Owls a good enough team that when we're playing, Tulane or Memphis or whoever in the middle of April, that can become 2-1, and then we're an above average team in the conference, because that's the leap that has to be. Because last year it was we got swept by Notre Dame, and it was then we get into conference play, and now we're getting swept by mid-level conference opponents. We're going 1-2 against mid-level conference opponents, and that was a pattern that continued until that second week of May. So I think that's really the question, is how is this going to translate to conference play when the Owls really gotta, they're not just playing historic programs and programs with way more money and talent than they have, but when they're matched up against their conference foes, are they gonna have what it takes? And I think that remains to be seen. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I just wouldn't put too much pressure on these next three games. I think there's a long season ahead. I think you're gonna get to play your conference opponents, and that's really the meat of the season and where you need to start winning these series 2-1 or even getting sweeps yourself.
That is very true. I think that's a good note to end on. No matter what happens this weekend, stay optimistic watching your historic Rice Owls baseball program for conference play. We have a couple messages for you, and then we will be right back with some brain rot.
Thank you, Ian. A very serious question on this PSA. If a fire broke out tonight while you were sleeping, would you and your family get out alive? Develop a home fire escape plan now. Practice it regularly. And remember, if there's a fire, get out and stay out. It's your safe fire response. This message is brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association. For more information, visit the National Fire Protection Association at nfpa.org. Our promotion today. For over 40 years and counting, join us every Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. for K-True's oldest running show, Chicken Skin. From songs that set your hair on end to combinations of country, blues, bluegrass, Texas swing, Cajun music, and folk of all varieties, Chicken Skin has all the best music that gives you goosebumps every Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Ian, why don't you introduce our new game for us?
Thank you, Chloe. You heard it here first, folks. If your house is on fire, get out. We have a new game for you today. All you iPad kids that have needed a dopamine stimulation, we are coming through. We have creatively titled this Wheel with Stuff. You can interpret that as you will. Andrew has assembled for us, kind of the work of our team, a whole wheel with, do we have any idea how many categories are on the wheel?
Maybe like 50.
About 50 categories. These are sports categories of things that people are going to try to name. So the way this works is we are going to spin the wheel, and then two of our, and it's going to land on a category. So let's say, for example, the category was NBA players, just for the sake of argument. I don't believe that's an actual category because that one's pretty easy. The two contestants will then begin bidding because they will have 30 seconds. So someone will say, I can name 5 in 30 seconds. I can name 10 in 30 seconds. And they keep going up until someone says, no, you can't. And then the person who had that highest bid has 30 seconds to name as many of the category as they can. And if they get it, they reach that number in 30 seconds, they win. If they don't, the other person wins. This is a one-round sudden death. We're going to have two matchups, and the winners of our matchups will be competing later in the episode for the Ultimate Championship, and that might be a best-of-three series, depending on time, so each player can have a chance to get the bid and show off their knowledge for the listeners at home. So our first matchup is Max and Andrew. Welcome, gentlemen. Andrew, go ahead and spin the wheel.
Okay, spinning right now.
We need a Wheel of Fortune, like, sound effect. Like,
oh, my God. Okay.
What is the category?
The category is NBA international players. So they play for, like, a country other than the U.S., I guess, currently.
So does that mean, like, play for their national team or are from a different country?
From a different country.
From a different country. So yeah. We're going to say NBA players from outside of the U.S. I have going to get a 30-second timer ready. Go ahead and start the bidding.
I'm going to say 4.
4.
I'll say 7.
Max has 7. Andrew.
7. 8.
10.
Nah. Okay. Name 10.
All right. Hold on. Okay. So Max has 30 seconds to name 10 international NBA players. Max, you have 3, 2, 1, go.
Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, Shea, Dylan Brooks, Jalen Williams, Joel Embiid, Evan Fournier, Wemby, Rudy Gobert.
He is at 9.
Please.
He is at 9. 15 seconds remaining. He needs one more. Can he come up with it? Folks, it doesn't get any more dramatic than this.
Oh, God.
5.
Jaime Jaquez.
That is time.
Goodness. Oh, my God. I almost choked that.
He got to exactly 10. I don't have ball knowledge. It's Jaime Jaquez.
He is, Mexican.
He is Mexican. Okay. That makes Max our winner of matchup 1. Holy cow, that was dramatic. Okay. Julian and Brandon, tough showing to follow. Welcome, gentlemen. Andrew, give the wheel another spin for us.
It's spinning right now.
Please.
Let's see. We have... Okay, the category is World Cup host countries, but I feel like Julian might have a big advantage on this.
Okay, table, what do we think? Do we let
them go? We could re-spin it?
We'll leave it.
I feel like Julian's like...
For those of you at home, Julian is a big soccer fan, and Brandon is, we'll say, less of a soccer fan.
Okay, I'll spin it one more time, and if we don't get something better, we'll just...
Okay, we're going to spin again, see if we can find something a little more balanced.
More competitive.
That's kind of a good one, though, if we had two soccer fans. I kind of like that
okay.
one.
Okay. No, this is a good one.
This is a good one. Okay.
The category is white NFL skill position players. So, like, no QBs.
Ooh.
Ooh, okay. No QBs, no, like, linemen.
So, let's define skill position.
Skill position is only receivers?
We're doing running backs, receivers.
And DBs.
Okay.
Currently?
Yes, currently.
All time.
No, currently.
All time.
Current. All right, so our category is current white NFL players who are running backs, receivers, or DBs. Do we count tight ends?
Yes.
I feel like most tight ends are white, though.
No tight ends.
We got to go. Running backs, receivers, corners, safeties. All right. Julian, why don't you start the bidding for us?
I could name 4.
4. Brandon.
I could name 6.
Do I have 6?
I could name 7.
7. Do I have 8?
I don't think you can name 7.
Okay.
7.
No. All right,
Julian, you have 30 seconds on the clock to name 7 white NFL skill position players who are currently in the league. 3, 2, one, go.
Okay, Adam Thielen, Cooper DeJean, Reed Blankenship, Christian McCaffrey. Oh my days.
18 seconds. Shoot. He needs three more.
Ben Skoranek. Does he still play on
valid,
the Rams?
Valid.
Ben Skoranek.
Okay, what a pull in his bag.
Does Matt Collins? No, he doesn't. No, Matt Collins doesn't count. How much time do I have? I have five.
You have six, five.
Oh my God.
Four,
no.
Three, two,
I
one.
Don't got it.
And that is time.
Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp would have in fact counted.
Luke McCaffrey.
Throwback Christian, but not Rice alone, Luke. That makes Brandon our winner from matchup two. If you want to see Max and Brandon fight to the death later in the show, we will be back with more Wheel of Stuff. All right, next we are going to talk about we're talking about the two All-Star weekends that recently happened in major sports. So Brandon and Julian are going to give us their thoughts on the NHL's Four Nations Cup and NBA All-Star weekend. I have a hunch there will be opposite sentiments for the two leagues, but we will let them fill you in on their thoughts. Gentlemen, take it away.
I'd just like to say, first of all, Canada, for the listeners who don't know, I was born in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I was a very proud Canadian last night when Canada defeated the USA in the Four Nations Face-Off Championship with the game-winning goal from rival player, albeit Connor McDavid. I am a Vancouver Canucks fan. Would have been cool to see Quinn Hughes. We'll get more to him later, play for the US. But yeah, great result for me. And I think just the general takeaway from this entire thing, even but like outside the result, Brandon, is how successful this entire Four Nations Face-Off was for the NHL.
Yeah, obviously as a proud American rooting for the Team USA, it was kind of disappointing. But overall, just I still think obviously Canada won, which not surprising. But the biggest winner is definitely hockey as a whole.
Yeah.
The fact that they were able to pull in over 10 million viewers in the first matchup between the USA and Canada.
Yeah, that
on
one
Saturday.
Was electric, man.
And the numbers aren't out yet at the time of recording this, but
For last night's game,
yeah. One can only assume that was even more. And just the 10.1 million that was last Saturday was the most watched hockey game since 2014.
Really, that was the Rangers-Kings matchup, which was LA-New York, right? So it's like, you know, you have like the two big markets, you know, now being matched by this international tournament in the middle of the season, which is what makes this so special, because you do have the Olympics, but this sort of came out of nowhere. For those who don't know, that the Four Nations Face-Off came basically as the replacement for the NHL All-Stars game, sort of like the NBA, which we will touch in a couple minutes. You know, the NHL All-Star game was not very successful or very popular among the fans. Players weren't really giving it their all. The challenges were sort of neither here nor there. So the fact that they came up with this idea, you know, it's not that creative an idea necessarily. It was only four teams, Canada, USA, Sweden, and Finland, basically playing in a round-robin sort of deal, you know, and the two teams with the best results playing a final. But it was super successful. I mean, if you remember that opening game between Canada and Sweden, the crowd in Montreal was
electric. Yeah,
you couldn't hear the commentator on Sportsnet like over like the crowd noise. It was pretty remarkable. And then last night at TD Garden in Boston, same sort of deal. I mean, there were Canadian fans there, but it was packed with American fans. You had so much publicity around the game too. Charles Barkley sending the team a message, President Donald Trump sending a message to the team as well. So a lot of very you know, well-known figures tuning in for the game. And even myself in like my circles here at Rice, you hear about these casual hockey fans or people who have never seen hockey before tune in for this game, which I thought was pretty special.
No, I definitely agree with that. And I think so much of the importance of this game comes from the fact that NHL players haven't been able to play for their country since 2016. So I think that this really set the stage for a lot of the super talented players that are in the NHL that haven't been able to represent their country at a national level yet.
Yeah.
And I think it was just a really good, like, really good sample for NHL and hockey, especially with the Olympics coming up next year in Milan, Italy, where the NHL players will be able to participate. And that obviously,
can't wait.
That will obviously be more than just four teams. But at the same time, you know, not that these are the four most competitive teams, arguably. We'll still see what ends up happening with Russia and Russian players.
Yeah.
But still, like, it was truly electric. And obviously, you know, there's some ups and downs with, like, the different teams. And I hope next year, though, both teams can stay more, like, uninjured.
Yeah, fully healthy. Yeah, because...
Because even this year, like, Canada had... Makar missed the first matchup.
Yeah, that was a huge,
you know,
miss.
And that's a huge loss. You know, Quinn Hughes wasn't in either of the matchups versus Canada. He would definitely be playing on the team.
Quinn Hughes.
If he was healthy. And then, you know, the USA clearly having a huge hole.
Oh, Charlie McAvoy yesterday in Boston. Yeah. Charlie McAvoy, by the way, is the Boston Bruins, the NHL team. They're like star defensemen. So for him not to represent his country in Boston, in like the biggest game a lot of these players have played in a while.
Well, and I mean,
huge.
Defensively, you saw the hole that was left. Like, he's just such a like impossible presence.
Yeah, Crosby, McKinnon, McDavid. You need like you need all hands on deck there, really. 100%. Like, I did want to ask you sort of, you know, what we could expect very quickly for a future matchup. Because yeah, ideally you have Makar playing for Canada. Quinn Hughes will be healthy.
For the US, yeah.
We might see Connor Bedard. You know, who sees how the Blackhawks do? We might see Connor Bedard play for Canada. Is it too early for Macklin Celebrini as well? He's looked very bright on the Sharks this year, you know, despite how poor the team has done. But the teams, even though it's a year from now, should look pretty different to what they looked like this year. Like, I can't imagine that, you know, maybe Mark Stone, you know, is still lumbering around.
Oh, yeah.
But players like Mark Stone, Sam Bennett, Brock Nelson for USA.
I would actually argue that the most interesting player to be seen is Sidney Crosby.
Considering he's at 36,
right? That one, he's definitely older at this point, and two, like, there was like, not to say he didn't play a good series and didn't play well in the tournament, but just like from what we've come to expect, like, is he going to be a first liner? Is he going to be the captain next year?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, they idolize him there in Canada.
Well, that's
man.
That's the whole thing with them is like, even though you might have a player that's better talent-wise at that point, is he going to bring the culture and the locker room presence that Crosby has? And I just...
Yeah, Canada hockey has been... Yeah, Sidney Crosby has been Canada hockey for so long, especially with the absence of those international tournaments. Because for a lot of Canadian fans, I mean, they think back to the Vancouver Olympics back in 2010 when he scored the game-winning goal in overtime against the U.S., he sort of represented what that nation loves about the game. And, you know, he's been a Pittsburgh Penguin his entire life or his entire career. But, you know, still Canadian fans love him there. Like, they were chanting his name in rival cities. It was pretty crazy. But, yeah, I mean, overall, the NHL really managed to just, like, hit it out of the park with this tournament. Whereas the NBA, on the other hand, well... I might just say it was a sort of more of the same that we've seen the past couple of years, you know, like the All-Star game, you know, it's fun seeing the draft and seeing the guys on the TNT panel, you know, drafting these guys onto teams, and it gets a lot of conversation, but the actual All-Star event just doesn't seem to be as exciting as it once was. But this has sort of been the storyline for the last couple of years.
Yeah. And honestly, I think the biggest issue with it is you just see such a contrast from how the NHL players really bought into like this four nations face off, because if they didn't, like, it wouldn't, like, the results wouldn't have been the same. Like, you saw it with the three fights in the first 9 seconds of the first game versus USA versus Canada, you know, like,
yeah. And sorry to interrupt, but like, no, something that we should bring up is like, hockey players aren't making these like supermax, like they aren't making supermax contract money, you know? So like, yeah, you know, you have your McDavids and your Matthews like earning all this money, but a lot of these guys in the NBA, they earn so much money, they don't want to get injured, right, and all this stuff. But it really shows hockey is just that different of a sport, even though they both play 82-game seasons. Like, they really just go out there and give their whole bodies.
Look at McAvoy. He's injured now.
Yeah.
Like, he's gonna miss time. Mm-hmm. Look at Vincent Trocheck. He broke his finger. So, yeah. Like, he played with a broken finger through the entirety of the tournament, basically.
And then LeBron sat out, like, what, the day of, and sort of ruined that photo shoot for the old men team,
but
right?
I think it just shows, like, how much of, like, we had been talking about how, like, if the NBA tried to, like, do something similar where they did, like, USA versus Canada versus a world team or versus France or stuff like that, how, like, maybe it would increase, like the players' willingness to like participate in it, because we kind of saw it with the Olympics this year,
right? Yeah,
but at the same time, it's just like
it doesn't really feel like the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Also, because remember before this last Olympics, remember all these stars, LeBron, Curry, KD,
sit out.
They were sitting out of those tournaments. So you wonder if you just get the same thing, and I wonder if it's less of a, you know, Gary Bettman. You know, it's not like he's been a super successful NHL commissioner necessarily. But
I think this might be like
his biggest success, 100%. So,
revolutionary for hockey.
You know, Adam Silver, you can say all you want, but maybe it's more of a cultural thing when it comes to basketball versus hockey, you know, where hockey for a long time, it's been, you know, putting your body on the line, you know, give it your all every shift. And basketball with, you know, load management becoming a big part of it, you have a lot of these, like, super big personalities who don't want to get injured, which makes sense. You know, the player, you know, you're right to do that. But I think the mentalities and the players and the culture around the league is just so much different in the NBA than the NHL, which is why, like, I don't really see an easy solution for the All-Star situation. I think the hockey one's a lot easier to do just because I think hockey does have a lot more international players than the NBA just naturally.
I would actually even argue, like, if the NBA can't find a solution for it, why even bother have it? Like,
just have like a break, or
have a break, or like do something that's different, because the players don't care about it. The fans clearly don't care about it. It's been bad product year after year. And like, I just don't see a benefit to it. Like, if you're going to go and just like basically put on like this facade, not really try, not have any of your players buy into it, like, what's the point of even having it?
Yeah, 100%. And the Canada players did seem very bought in and seemed like they were honored to win that tournament yesterday. Great to talk hockey on the show for the first time. That was great. We're going to kick it back over to Ian so we can move on to the championship of our game segment.
All right. As promised, we've got Max and Brandon back for a best of three final series of Wheel with Stuff. We will workshop the name. But, Andrew, let's get that wheel spinning. We need some stuff for them to name.
All right. So the first category they're going to play with is... This is another potentially unfair one. It's Champions League winning teams. But I feel like if you compare Max's expertise in soccer to Brandon's, we might have a little bit of a mismatch here.
What are our thoughts?
I don't know. Brandon, do you think you can do it?
All right, Brandon, Brandon is nodding like he can do it. So we're going to go... Yeah, this is best of three. So... First one to take two. So again, if you bid and you get it, you get one of your 2 points. If you don't get it, the other person gets one of their two. Should we have Max or Brandon start the bidding? What do we think?
Sure, Max, go for it.
All right, Max, Champions League winning teams.
I can name seven.
Seven.
I can name 10.
10.
Oh. I don't think you can name 10.
All right, Brandon, 30 seconds on the clock. We need 10 teams that have won the Champions League. You have 30 seconds. 3, 2, 1, go.
Ajax. Barcelona, Madrid, Real Madrid, Manchester United, Aston Villa.
We're at five right now.
Yeah.
Come on.
10 seconds. Five teams to go.
Liverpool.
Boom.
Tottenham.
How many?
That is time.
Six.
The soccer fans in the room made a face at Tottenham. Like, they weren't sure if that was a viable answer, but it does not matter. He'll be at six or seven.
Yeah.
So Max is on the board. If Max wins this next one, he will be our mini tournament championship for the episode. Andrew, give us another category.
All right. Hopefully we get one that's a little bit more balanced here. Let's see. Okay. NBA Finals MVPs.
Ooh. All right. We'll have Brandon start it off this time. How many do you think you can name?
I can name five.
Five, Max.
I can name eight.
Eight. Brandon.
I don't think you can.
All right, Max, you're on the clock. You got 30 seconds. Eight NBA Finals MVPs. 3, 2, 1, go.
Jaylen Brown, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Giannis, Kobe, Shaq, Iguodala, Curry.
Bang, there's eight.
Damn.
Wow.
Wow, all right. That'll do it, folks.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
I think he's perfect. He won two bids, got
three
them both, called someone out. They didn't get it. What more can you ask for? Great showing. Congratulations, Max Baserto. He is a winner of our inaugural tournament of Wheel of Stuff. We are now going to kick it to Julian for a 30-second brief rundown about the Texans' new offensive coordinator. Julian.
Yeah, so we're just going to take you through some of the news from sports recently. So the Houston Texans lightened up the Houston skies by firing the thief of joy, Bobby Slowick himself. Stepping into his ever-important role of offensive coordinator is yet another young guy in Nick Caley. Caley is joining the team from the LA Rams, where he was the tight end coach under Sean McVay. Not a lot of experience, but if your birthplace says anything about your success, then this man from the NFL Hall of Fame's home in Canton, Ohio, is going to take us to the Lombardi glory. Off to Jacob to talk about Alex Bregman.
Alex Bregman's going to Fenway, and with that comes drama. Devers doesn't want to move, despite statistically being the worst 20% of third baseman defensively. On the other hand, Bregman is a Gold Glove winner at third base and in the top 10% of third bases defensively. From here, we see potential scenarios where Devers stays at third, Bregman to second, or depending how spring training goes for number 7 prospect Christian Campbell, could make the situation even more complicated. Alex Cora has made it clear that he wants the best roster going into opening day, and Devers can understand that baseball is still a business, as he in fact does want to win, as he made it clear last spring training. In a positive light, Bregman is willing to move, yet it will be fun to see how spring training pans out and would recommend seeing how Cora will find a solution in the coming weeks. Moving it back to Julian to cover the Champions League.
All right, if you wanted a crash course on what not to do in a win or go home playoff game, then AC Milan left back Teo Hernandez gave you that generous gift earlier this week. In their UEFA Champions League knockout game against Dutch side Feyenoord, he got a second yellow card for diving, leaving his team one man short as they conceded late to Feyenoord. Your pink hair couldn't help you there, Theo. In other news, his fellow countryman Kylian Mbappe reminded everyone why he's the best in the world, scoring a hat-trick against a severely underperforming Manchester City side. He looks to continue building momentum for Madrid as the last 16 kicks off next month. They will play Atletico in another marquee matchup for you. PSG, highly in form against one of the better teams in the world, Liverpool. Back to you, Ian, for predictions.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We are going to wrap up our show as usual with predictions. We are going to start it off with the hometown Houston Cougars men's basketball team. We've talked about them a couple times. They have been on an absolute steamroll. I don't think they've lost a conference game yet, and it is February 21st. That, man, you can't get much better than that. They are taking on number 8th nationally ranked Iowa State at home this Saturday. I believe that game is at 2 o'clock. That's right here in town at the Fertitta Center. Let's go around the table and make our pick. Brandon, why don't you start us off? We'll go this way.
I think Houston's going to win.
Brandon thinks Houston's going to win.
I got to be H-Town biased and pick Houston as well. Max?
I think this Houston team is special and that this will be the biggest crash out of all time for them. So I will take Houston and keep building that hype so they can crash out in March.
Houston's hot and they're at home. I'll take the Cougars.
Give me the Cougs.
Houston just has been steamrolling people. They show no signs of stopping it. Max alluded to March. We'll see then. For now, things look good. Ian?
Cannot in good conscience pick against Houston given recent history. I think that's the first time in the history of predictions we've all made the same pick.
So. H-Town.
If Iowa State wins, that would be funny. All right, we are going to take it now to Liverpool v Man City, our first ever soccer prediction. Brandon, who you got?
I think it's going to be a very good match, but I'm going to take Liverpool.
I really wanted to take Man City, even as a Liverpool fan, because we've been in terrible form recently, picking up maybe two or three straight draws, And I think we'll take another one. We'll put in a good effort, but Man City always seem to play us well at the Etihad. Max?
I'll never pick against my team, so give me Man City.
Unlike Julian, I believe in us. You'll never walk alone. Give me Liverpool.
The Reds got to get take another win. Should be a close game, but give me Liverpool.
Liverpool's the better team, but Man City always plays them tough, and they're at home. I think they can eke out a draw here.
I will take Liverpool. What should we do? Should we go last game, dog, or standings? We didn't talk about this beforehand. Last game. All right. Our last game is Knicks versus Celtics. I believe that game is in Boston this weekend in the association. Brandon, who you got?
I got the Knicks behind a monster game from Jalen Brunson because he just has so much hate for Boston, so much hate for Jason Tatum, so much hate for the Celtics. Like, he just always plays his best. Give me the Knicks.
Boston needs to rebound after a terrible night last night against the Canadiens. U.S. as the new 11th province. Give me the Celtics. They need a win.
The Celtics have absolutely owned the Knicks this year, and that will continue.
I'm sticking with the Celtics and my glorious king, Jaylen Brown.
Pains me to say this as a Lakers fan, but give me the Celtics.
I'm rooting for that Brunson masterclass, but I think the Celtics get this one at home. Ian?
I will take the defending champions out of Boston as well. Before we get into our final underdog, our final pick, which is our underdog of the week, I'm going to quickly fill you in on our predictions standings for those of you at home. If you were unaware, we do keep score of how everyone has done over the history of the show. We've been making these picks since we started last fall. Brandon is in the lead when he's 19-7. He's at a 73% success rate. Andrew is right behind at a 72%. These are not sorted in order, so excuse me. Max also is at a 72%. And then there's a little bit of a fall off. We've got Chloe at 64, Julian at 61. Then we've got Garrett at 58. He's not able to make it today, but he'll be back to try to keep himself above 500 in the future. And then we've got, I believe then we've got Jacob as 1-1, having just joined the staff. And I am the only member under 500. I'm at 43%. Oh, no. Oh, David's at 44%. I'm in good company with Mr. Coronado. He's also not with us today. We will order the percentages next time we update you on standings. To finish out our predictions segment, let's give our underdog of the week a reminder for the listeners at home. Their money line must be at least plus 200. So that means that you would over double your money if you would triple your money. Yeah, if that. Yeah, that's how percentages work. You would triple your money if that team wins. If it is correct, it counts as a win. If it is not, it does not affect your losses in your win-loss record that we calculate the percentage from. It's a free chance to take a shot in the dark on an underdog. Brandon, who do you like?
I think Henry Cejudo is going to win in his fight tomorrow. You know, former champion, kind of old at this point, but I think he finds a way to win.
This was my idea once again, not Fox's, but I will take Nottingham Forest at Newcastle. Forest have been very good this season, and Newcastle have a stinker in them every so often. Max?
I'm going to go up to my home state and pick Oregon basketball to beat Wisconsin.
Last time I chose Forest and Julian copied me, they lost 5-0, so hopefully this time it goes a little bit better and give me Forest.
Going now to a very niche topic of the La Liga MX. Chivas has been on quite a skid. They've been playing pretty poorly, I'm not going to lie. They're going to probably have to settle for a draw against Pachuca.
Some called this a cop-out, but I think that this is just good business. I have a lot of conviction in the Liverpool-Man City draw, so I couldn't believe when the line was plus 270, so that's going to be my underdog of the week.
That is a little bit of a cop-out. We've decided to let it slide for now. With the last one, I will take the Kentucky Wildcats at plus 280. They are going into Tuscaloosa in men's basketball to take on, I think, number 2 nationally, Alabama. So that will be an absolute barn burner in the SEC no matter what happens. Big marquee matchup there. Thank you so much for joining us for this week on Against the Grain. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon. music. Make sure you stay in the loop by following us at ktrue.sports on Instagram, at ktruesports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works. If you have a question for us, feel free to DM us on either of the aforementioned social media platforms or drop a note to ktruesports@gmail.com. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Thank you again. Eat your veggies, wear your seat belts, have a little fun, make good choices. We will see you next week.